Buying or selling your home? Real Estate for Life can connect you with a pro-life real estate agent. When Real Estate for Life receives a referral fee, they donate 65% to Catholic Answers. Learn more at realestateforlife.org. Welcome back, Catholic Answers Live. We're going to talk about modern fashion this hour. Yes, we are. You're like, no, they're not on Catholic. Yes, we are. And so that's why I'm calling this hour a fashion show, even though I know a fashion show is a different thing. This is a fashion show that we're doing. This hour, Catherine Rose is our guest. She has a beautiful new book, A Return to Beauty, Ancient Catholic Wisdom.
Here it is.
And there it is. She's holding it up. And Modern Fashion. Catherine Rose, thank you so much for being here with us. Congratulations on the book.
Thanks for having me. This is really exciting.
This is not the cutting edge of Catholic, Instagram, YouTube, social media. Though we don't see a lot of people out there talking about this. Why are you talking about it?
I did not want to.
well, that's encouraging.
Let's be honest, because people, especially women, can get so offended if they feel condemned. So that I did not want this mission from God. The short story is that I was raised Catholic-ish. I got the sacraments, but no catechetical formation. Mm-hmm. So in high school, I took on cultural norms in terms of how one dresses. And I was prom queen, so you can imagine. I had a big conversion at Notre Dame to like the depths of the Catholic faith. It was all
really
new to me, and it was incredible. Mm-hmm. So then I felt a good deal of shame at how I presented my body. Pope John Paul's theology of the body was life-changing for me. So then, after college, I was like a really devout Catholic. I was a pro-life lobbyist and a foster mom and doing adoration at my parish. And one day I was in adoration praying and I had my eyes closed. And out of nowhere, I had this like kind of scene in front of me. It was a sidewalk full of light and with women and men dressed, I guess, kind of like as they were in the 50s. And there was so much joy and energy. And I heard God say, "You go and accomplish this." And I opened my eyes and I was like, what? Like, how does one do that, first of all? And also, why does it even matter if I wear skirts and dresses? I'm being modest, right, in my jeans and T-shirts.
Right.
So that was 14 years ago. And so for 14 years, I've just lived it. And I talked about it a little bit, but I encountered women being really offended if I talked about it. I guess I must have presented it in a way that kind of felt condemnatory. So 2 years ago, my husband, Devin, began to say to me, write this in a book. And I was like, oh, no way. I don't want this. And I've even told God, like, God, couldn't I have talked about something that everybody likes, like adoration or,
Yeah, nobody wants to hear this. Give me a better message. Yeah, okay. Yeah. Okay, so you were in the bargaining phase at that point. With God.
Correct. But Devin just kept saying this. And finally, I was like, well, maybe it's the Holy Spirit. Like, okay. I don't want this. So really out of obedience, God oftentimes will kind of like give me the gauntlet. That's kind of, he just does big things for me. And so I had to be obedient and I was really afraid. And it's still, it's delicate. But I do my best to just share what God's called me to and my own experience with it.
So I want to get at what you actually think about clothing then, and about as I was telling you before we went on the air, I live in Southern California.
Right.
And last summer for our 30th anniversary, my wife and I went to Hawaii, and it does seem like a lot of people have given up on the idea of clothing. I mean, I don't feel like I'm prudish, but I still feel like, wow, like you really, there's, people are wearing very, very little in many mm-hmm. places. So what is your theory of clothing, so to speak? Or how would you address just the idea of why do we wear clothes? What are we doing?
Well, I mean, there's so many different answers to what you just said. So we can start with why we wear clothing, but then also talk about, you mentioned prudish, which, right, like prudish actually is what was derogatory a derogatory way to look at the virtue of prudence. So we can talk about the virtue around clothing.
Okay.
And then kind of what's happened now. So why we wear clothes, right? Pope John Paul did a really like a beautiful way of re-explicating what was classic to mystic, classic teaching. So, you know, the church fathers said that at the moment that Eve and Adam ate the apple, that there was like a rupture between their bodies and their souls in some mysterious way, that, you know, original Adam and Eve had original innocence, mm-hmm. and they'd had also perfect integration of their bodies and souls, such that the body somehow fully expressed their souls. Pope John Paul says that the body expressed the person fully. But then, of course, after original sin, that rupture happened, that now someone could see Eve's body, let's say Adam could see her body, even though he loved her, but he could see her as just a body, no longer as Eve, fully present, fully revealed through her body.
Right.
So that's why right away they put on fig leaves, because there was this awareness of like, wow, someone can see me now as just an object. My body no longer fully images God, right? Mm-hmm. My insides. What's fascinating is then it says that God came along, then God sewed them garments that were actual clothes that were animal skins. So God almost like provided them with more covering. Of course, then what's beautiful about Catholic teaching, because, you know, I got my undergrad degree in theology, and I was so fascinating to read, like Martin Luther, for example, and the Protestants and their view of sanctification was that I'm totally depraved, or I'm a pile of dung, let's say, and then God's grace covers me like a pile of, you know, a dung covered with snow, Martin Luther said. But Catholic teaching actually, as I'm sure you know, is that rather we're always working to cooperate with grace so that we are sanctified, we are transformed to totally fully image God. So that, like, I mean, you think about Mother Teresa, perhaps her face was not like physically beautiful, but she was beautiful, right? This light shone through her. So she had been so sanctified and like filled with grace. So that's the goal for each of us. So that's why we wear clothes, is to protect ourselves from someone seeing too little, seeing me as just an object.
Mm-hmm.
But also, I mean, clothes have a good function, because as human animals, we don't have fur to guard us against the sun. And you're in California, you know, it's so funny that people wear sunblock and a bikini, let's say, because sunblock has to be reapplied every 2 hours.
Right.
And I definitely got terrible sunburns before I knew better and used to wear a bikini. So with my children, like, they would wear long sleeve rash guards and board shorts just because I'd not want to have to put sunblock on them. So, I mean, clothes protect us from harm.
We with our kids at the beach, the greatest thing that ever happened was the rash guard in child size. Like, it's a great, you just don't have to apply all that goop over and over and over again.
Yep.
Just wear the rash guard. Okay, so you mentioned the bikini. I feel like we are so like, we're weird as a society. We're just odd. And is it immoral to wear a bikini? Like, let's just get right down to it. What is there? What's the problem with the bikini? Let's go. These guys are going to cut this and make this a social media post of me going,
I know,
what's the problem with the bikini? I know they're going to do that.
Oh, my word. So, I'm going to get hate mail.
Okay, so tell me, though.
Well, okay, so let's talk about so Pope John Paul and his love and responsibility.
Mm-hmm.
Among certain people, that's actually got sort of, I think it's been diminished to say that Pope John Paul just said, well, if I'm wearing something that's like for the occasion or that's for the activity, it's fine, like what I'm wearing, because I don't intend to make someone lust. But actually, a closer reading of his text shows that he was definitely saying, yes, like dress for the occasion, dress for your work, but also talked about shame. So that men have emotional shame and women have physical shame, he said. And this is like good shame, right? So that men are aware that I need to protect myself from becoming aroused, because that would actually like not be emotionally appropriate with this woman who's not my wife. so that men seek to guard themselves and then women seek to guard themselves from physical shame, that I don't want someone to look at me in a way that demeans me.
Yeah.
So all this brings it then to the bikini. Like, one could say, well, I'm wearing a bikini because it's for the activity of swimming. But if we're honest, I used to wear a bikini. If I'm honest, bikinis are actually not made for swimming. They're made for like sunbathing, and they're actually made for looking.
Yeah.
Bikinis are too flimsy to do active swimming. You can dive into the pool and it might not stay on. And then there also is the fact that it's actually not, again, like helpful for guarding in the sun. What's interesting is, you know, like Victorians get a bad rap because they had these like swim dresses and they were heavy wool and people actually could drown in them.
No, that's not good.
No, yeah. But I mean, there were very like suitable, and I'm not advocating that we wear swim dresses either, but like something that's light cotton or linen that breathes well will actually be more comfortable at the beach than if I'm in a bikini and I'm getting all the sun exposure and getting sunburned. So I think that women, that we can very much deceive ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
I also want to say that oftentimes women are not even necessarily wearing a bikini to like incite a man. It actually is oftentimes because the other girls are wearing bikinis too, and I want to fit in. There is a lot
of
drive among women.
Mm-hmm.
We want to look like the popular girls. I want to look as thin as they. I want to have the six pack like the Instagram influencers do. I want to have the right tan. So we don't always think as women about actually what we're doing and how we might be representing ourselves. That's like in a highly sexualized way without meaning to.
Yeah. 888-318-7884. Catherine Rose is our guest. We're discussing clothing, basically. In a certain sense, you could almost say a Christian theology of clothing and of beauty and modesty and all those things that can be expressed or can fail to be expressed by our clothing choices. If you'd like to talk about fashion from a Catholic Christian perspective, you are welcome to call 888-318-7884. I got a few more questions I want to get ask before we get to the callers. Catherine, we have to take a very quick break. We'll take that break. We'll be right back with Catherine Rose. She's the author of Return to Beauty, this beautiful book on the ancient Catholic wisdom and modern fashion. 888-318-7884.
Your questions, Catholic Answers Live.
Support for Catholic Answers Live comes from Catholic Chemistry, a dating app for Catholics. Founded by a longtime member of the Catholic Answers team, CatholicChemistry.com.
Underwriting for Catholic Answers Live is provided by Real Estate for Life. Real Estate for Life connects homebuyers and sellers to real estate agents while supporting pro-life organizations. On the web at realestateforlife.org.
With news from EWTN's Rome office, you can watch all the important events from Rome, even if you don't have TV access. Using the latest technology, we've made it possible to watch the latest news from the Holy See, all delivered directly to your home via live streams. Watch live on EWTN's YouTube channel and follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and X.
Welcome back, Catholic Answers Live. It's funny listening to our guest, Catherine Rose, got the vocation to talk about clothing and appropriate dress and did not want that. She wanted the vocation where you talk about Eucharistic adoration. That would be easier. Because
right.
you don't make
That's
any friends.
Nice.
You really, I mean, when a person gets it, I think they're grateful for it. But there's a lot of resistance to this idea that we should be more attentive to what we wear, more careful about what we wear. I mean, among men, you know, if you say you should wear a collared shirt to church, you know, some men are, and I can tell you at certain points in my life, I probably would have been offended by that. I would have been like, man, your own business. But, you know, I'm not talking about putting on a suit and tie, like just dress appropriately for church. I think there are men who get offended by that. I do think women, I don't know. I don't envy you in having to say, some of the things that you have to or have taken it on to say, but they're necessary. That they're in order to express the beauty of our Christian faith, how we dress has to comport with our Christian faith.
Yes, I mean, like you, when I was in college, I would go to like daily mass in shorts and a tank top. And I like.
I didn't wear the tank top. I never had the guns to pull off the tank top, Catherine.
Good, good. Men should not wear tank tops. I mean, nor should women. But I didn't know I loved Jesus. I was going to join a confession. I had no idea because there was
right.
no standard.
Yeah.
And I think if priests talked about this, but then also I talked to some young priests who want to, and they've actually been told by their bishops, don't touch this because they're going to get calls. People are going to be upset.
Mm-hmm.
So how do we actually see this as not a should, but rather as an opportunity? And also, I guess as like appropriate, right? If I'm going to mass, which is the representation on the altar of Jesus' sacrifice, if the curtains of history roll back and I'm present at Golgotha again, but I'm also then going to receive my King and Holy Communion, like, shouldn't I dress for my King?
Yeah.
So what I've seen our parish here in Tyler is like pretty reverent. And we've watched as some women come for the first time and they're wearing like jeans or t-shirts. And then I see them like look around and realize, oh, people don't do that here.
Oh.
And hopefully no old women approach them. Actually, it happened a couple times where they've been, had an old woman who makes things worse. God bless her. So our pastor has said, don't talk to people about what they're wearing. You know, on the door, there's like a sign posted about here's what's appropriate in the house of God. But really, I think it has to be peer pressure. Like in a positive way.
Yeah, that's social. Like that's what a social. I mean, as a social creature, we do take clues from one another. And so you're saying send out the correct social cues to someone else, and that creates the inner kind of pressure to go, oh, this is how they dress here. I have to say, Catherine, I really agree with your pastor. Except in extreme cases, or you have some particular reason to know that what you say will be fruitful, you know, like that, like an angel told you, keep your mouth shut about how other people are dressed in church. Don't walk up to a young teenage girl and go, your skirt is too short for church. Unless your goal is that girl never come back to church, then keep your mouth shut.
Yeah, it's a tough one. You know, my son, when he hit puberty, he told me it's so hard now because now actually I want to look. And so, but these young girls aren't aware. Like I wasn't aware again when I was a teen. They're wearing this thing because it's cute. They don't know. And their parents haven't told them. And also like, how do their parents tell them? Well, parents, I will say, buy the book. Yeah. And we talk about all these things to empower you to have like talking cues for your children.
The book, by the way, to say it again, is A Return to Beauty, Ancient Catholic Wisdom and Modern Fashion. It's by our guest, Catherine Rose. All right. I know we're kind of dwelling on immodesty a little bit, but I do want to ask you, how did we get to this point? Because I think everybody can see that people dress differently in 1960 than they dress today. And they dressed quite differently in 1900 than they dressed in 1960. And the trend seems to be towards ever more casual, ever less fabric. That seems to be the direction that we go. Be more casual and have less fabric involved. So what is that about? What is that movement about?
Yes. Well, it's going to sound creepy and it's going to sound like a conspiracy. But I mean, it was a conspiracy. So, you know, the Freemasons, their goal is to destroy the Catholic Church. And so in the 1800s, it was kind of this hotbed of revolution and radical ideas. And the revolutionaries who were atheistic and oftentimes Masons in Italy were the Carbonari. They would wear the red shirts. And so there's a great book. I'm going to quote by it. It was a Monsignor Dillon, and he wrote a book called The War of the Antichrist. And so he got a hold of these letters written in the secret society in the Carbonari. And the letter is from a guy, pen named Vindex, to Nubius. And Vindex, like, writes his plan to destroy the church. And essentially he says, listen, like, we've been doing too many assassinations and we're just, it's not working, because he actually quotes Tertullian. As Tertullian said, blood of the martyrs is the seed of the church. So we keep killing these Catholics and they just become more Catholics. So rather we have to corrupt. This was his insight, was the church will be destroyed if we corrupt the church. And he talks about his insight into how to corrupt priests. Very fascinating. I encourage you to read this. And then how to corrupt men. But then my topic is how to corrupt women. Because he says, interestingly enough, one cannot really corrupt women, but we must try, because, and he quotes the old Roman saying, corruptio optime pessime, the corruption of the best becomes the worst. So he notes that when women are corrupted, the home falls apart. But also then sexual morals tend to fall apart. And women can feel frustrated about this. They can feel resentful that somehow, like, sexual morality rests with them. But I think it's because women are naturally more tied to their bodies. And so, if a woman gets pregnant as a result of premarital intercourse, well, then she suffers more, or she feels that more, obviously, and she has a bigger responsibility to bear. So all this is to say that these Freemasons published this document for corrupting the church. Pope Leo the
13th, yeah.
13th got a hold of it, and he ordered it published so that Catholics would be warned about this new attack on the church. We know that the communists sent young men into seminaries, and so did the Masons, so as to corrupt the church. So what's interesting then is for centuries, it had always been the case in the West, from the Greeks and the Romans and then to Christendom, everybody who was decent always wore fabric from collarbone to ankle, women and men. And suddenly in 1910, hemlines begin to rise. And all of a sudden by 1920, you have flappers who are wearing things at their knee that are sleeveless, that have their backs showing, and oftentimes they're also like transparent dresses. Now, you can't tell me that in 10 years it was a natural organic development of fashion after centuries of unchanging conviction about what, like, right, what's decent.
Right, we let go of something. It seems like we just let go of something that we knew was valuable, and that took some convincing.
Well, I think it was actually like architecture by influencers who perhaps thought that they were going to free Catholics from superstition and make them, you know, free in science, let's say. But there was a very brave French Dominican priest who his mission, his goal was to publish what these societies that were secret, like the Masons, what they were doing. So he got his hands on, it was a 1928 Masonic Congress in Switzerland, and he was able to get the hands on their resolution, and I'm going to read it because it's so important. They resolved, we may use a pretext such as sports, hygiene, or health resorts. It's necessary to corrupt that our boys and girls practice nudism in dress. To avoid too much reaction, one would have to proceed in a methodical manner. First, undress up to the elbow, then up to the knees, then arms and legs completely uncovered. Later, the upper part of the chest, the shoulders, and everything else. Eventually, people will walk around naked or almost naked, like in Hawaii, batting an eye. And this is actually key. When modesty is removed, the sense of the sacred will be extinguished, morality will weaken, and faith will die of suffocation.
You know that I think that they're actually right about that. Sometimes I think we think that the church is, again, I'll go back to that word prudish, in promoting a life of chastity appropriate to a person's state in life, right, and a life of modesty. But the reality is that when you actually start to practice that, try to live chastely and modestly and, in all those ways that St. Paul recommends, you find that that does liberate the spirit in a way, that there is an enslavement that comes from inchastity and a kind of looseness about sexuality and the expression of the body immodestly.
Yeah. Briefly, actually, I see that we have some questions, but before we get to those, can we just talk about the virtue of modesty? Okay. So first of all, prudish, again, means prudent, and prudence is practical wisdom, right? It's like knowing how to act in appropriate ways. Eventually, it was just dumbed down because a woman ought to be prudent. And part of that is guarding herself from someone who would demean her sexually and saving right. like the gift of her body for her husband in marriage. So eventually it was just like dumbed down to, oh, it means that she's anti-sex. But prudence is the queen of the virtues, right? So then modesty is a daughter of the cardinal virtue of temperance. The four cardinal virtues are prudence, justice, temperance, and fortitude. Temperance is the Goldilocks virtue, right? It's the not too much, not too little, just right. Mm-hmm. So modesty is a daughter of temperance, which is fascinating, I think. And modesty has to do with how I present myself in the world. Do we need to wait for a break, though?
You heard
it.
You
did.
Yes.
I heard
the music started to play. So let's finish with that, with prudence and temperance, modesty, and how all of this adds up right after this with Catherine Rose on Catholic Answers Live.
Okay.
Why do Catholics pray to dead people, bow to statues, venerate relics? And where do we find any of this stuff in the Bible? In the delightful book, The Saints Pray for You, Dr. Carlo Broussard convincingly defends the ancient Christian belief rooted in Scripture that the saints care for us, that they are allies. Order your copy of The Saints Pray for You today at shop.catholic.com or ask for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
What was the church like in its infancy? In a word, Catholic. And Joe Heschmeyer has the receipts. In his best-selling book, The early church was the Catholic Church. He gives you the details from the historical records of the first two centuries of Christianity. Right now, get a copy for just $10, plus free shipping if you live in the continental United States. Get more information and order The Early Church Was the Catholic Church at theearlychurchwascatholic.com.
When the resurrected Jesus appeared to disciples on the road to Emmaus, they didn't recognize him. Until the breaking of the bread. The same is true today. In the Holy Eucharist, we really meet Jesus. In The Eucharist is Really Jesus, author Joe Heschmeyer explains how knowing Jesus in the Eucharist is the key to understanding all of Christian faith. Order your copy of The Eucharist is Really Jesus today at shop.catholic.com or get it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
Throughout history, some Catholics have been among the worst kind of villains, right? Or were they? In Canceled, historian Steve Weidenkopf digs into the lives and controversies of some of these Catholics whose reputations have been blackened, often unfairly. He takes on the anti-Catholic versions of history and defends not only these figures, but the faith they represent. Order your copy of Canceled today at shop.catholic.com or ask for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
Catherine Rose is our guest. She's got a book out called A Return to Beauty, Ancient Catholic Wisdom and Modern Fashion. If you yourself have these questions about how one applies the virtues to the whole area of dress and the presentation of the body, but maybe you want to talk with your kids about this. Maybe this is something you'd like some actual practical help talking with you. Either way, this is a good one, A Return to Beauty. You can probably get it wherever you get your good books, you can get this one, A Return to Beauty.
Yeah, definitely on Amazon is the number one seller.
The Amazons did not dress appropriately. I don't think you should be on there. I'm sorry, that was dumb. I just wanted to make dumb jokes. All right, so you were in the middle of talking about, look, if we really want to talk about clothing and dress and fashion and the presentation of the person through their manner of dress, you got to go back to the basics. You got to talk about virtues. And so you were in the midst of illustrating for us the virtue of prudence and the virtue of temperance as essential when we think about the use of clothing.
Correct. So modesty, as I was saying, is the daughter of temperance. And modesty has to do with how I am in the world, both in my speech and in my action and in my dress. So because virtue is the golden mean between two extremes, with like self-presentation, the two extremes are, on the one end, it's too little self-presentation. It's a desire to hide from the public eye, and a feeling that, like, if anybody sees me, that that's vanity, which is wrong. And on the other extreme is a desire for people to look at me and to see me. And actually, that is vanity, right? Like self-glorification. But in the middle, there's an appropriate level of presenting myself in public. So Thomas Aquinas says that with regard to public dress, there's three aspects to it. I just love Thomas Aquinas because he's so systematic. So the first aspect of a presentation of myself is that I dress for the occasion. And Pope John Paul talks about this in his Love and Responsibility, that but I think as Americans, we're too casual about it. So, for example, like, I would not go to your wedding wearing pajamas, but I might go to your wedding, and actually I've seen this, wearing like jeans and a t-shirt. Mm-hmm. Or I might go to Mass wearing jeans and a t-shirt. So we have become so casual as Americans that we tend to underdress. So that's the first aspect, is that I dress for the occasion. And then second, that I dress for my station. And again, that's like strange to our American ears. There used to be like, you know, very kind of set stations in like Christendom, and there were guilds. And so there actually were sumptuary laws that if I'm like in the butcher's guild, I can't wear velvet or something like that. So that's different now, but certainly, like, I'm Devin's wife, I'm a homeschooling mother, and I'm a Catholic daughter. So I can dress in such a way to elevate and honor my station. Like, I chose to leave pro-life lobbying to be a full-time mom, and I would dress for work when I was a lobbyist. So if I choose this life, well, I can dress to show that I'm proud of this life.
Right.
And then the third aspect is that I dress so as to honor others. And I do that through like presenting myself in such a way that's not going to embarrass them. So we don't just like dress for like self-expression. There actually are kind of rules around dressing, Thomas Aquinas said, that we would call perhaps decorum. In fact, I remember, I'm going to bungle the quote, but like last fall, the American Secretary of Transportation, remember, she said, like, what's happened to American dress in airports? Like,
oh, yeah.
Let's have more decorum, right? Like, let's step it up. And especially whenever I travel, or I mean, like, wherever I go, people usually say, like, oh, I love your outfit. And I'm just dressing in like a trendy way, but I intentionally dress. I'm not wearing PJs. I'm wearing like usually like a pretty dress and comfy shoes. But I want to like elevate where I go and, you know, shine for Jesus, I think.
Yeah. But we just don't believe in that social aspect of the things we do anymore. We believe in individual. This is myself. This is how I express myself. Well,
yes. Yeah,
but you're part of a society. You're part of a community. You're part of what other people are experiencing as well. So if you wear, and I am never going to speak up if somebody does this, but if you wear your Megadeth t-shirt to Mass, well, you're actually affecting everyone else's celebration of the Mass when you do that. So I do want to get to a couple calls, though. You've done a beautiful job, but I want to get – we've kept Betsy in Detroit waiting for a little bit.
We have some good questions.
Betsy in Detroit, Michigan, listening on the Ave Maria Radio Network. We're very glad you're here. Go ahead with your question for Catherine Rose.
Hi. I think you have to take into consideration some of the cultural differences. I lived in France, and – honestly, looking back, I look like an American slob.
Yep.
They didn't think there was anything wrong with showing a little bit of cleavage. It wasn't sexualized like it is over here. So I started wearing skirts. I started dressing nicer, and I wasn't nearly as covered. However, to me, I was more presentable, and it was not sexualized. I don't have a model's body, but I do not like wearing a one piece at the beach. I just don't like it. Now, I live in an area where there are a lot of Muslims. Some of them are covered head to toe, but what good does that do when they're wearing something that is so tight it leaves absolutely nothing for the imagination?
Okay, so what's your question, or are you having like more of a disagreement?
Well, it's both. I think you have to take into consideration that there are cultural differences. And just because a woman wears a bikini at the beach or maybe shows a little bit of cleavage in a top that she's wearing, I don't think it necessarily makes it wrong. Of course, it depends on where it is, where she's going to. But I think we have to take some of the cultural norms. When I lived in France, the dress there was completely different than how it is in America. And it wasn't sexualized like it is here.
Okay. Well, I would wonder if a man would talk about seeing cleavage, and perhaps he would have a different view, even if you as a woman were not intending to be sexualized. I'm not saying that you were showing too much cleavage. I don't know what you were wearing. And honestly, Betsy, I can't tell you what's right for you. All I can point to is what the church says. So I'm quoting Thomas Aquinas here. For me personally, I choose to wear the Vatican dress code that Pope John Paul instituted, because I figure if it's good enough for the Vatican, it's good enough for Tyler, Texas. So Pope John Paul said that it was appropriate in public and in one's home to wear fabric from upper chest to cover the upper arms, to cover the knees. So, you know, those French women are beautiful. I love the Peter Pan collars. I love Audrey Hepburn. I love the pearls. But I don't know if just because I'm dressing up means that I have to show cleavage. I think it's possible to be as lovely and perhaps wear a camisole if something is low cut. In terms of people at the beach, you raise a good point that just because there's a lot of fabric, but if it's skin tight, that's also like perhaps not honoring the body. So certainly. But I think, again, like speaking about bikinis, this is between you and your husband and between you and God. But if we're honest about bikinis in terms of sun coverage, you're guarding us from the sun and also making it easier for us to swim, maybe it's worth considering a rash guard and board shorts. So, but you do make a good point that there are cultural differences. While the West would always have fabric from collarbone to ankle, but you might show a little like shoulders, you know, at the ball. When I was in India in college, they had fabric from collarbone to ankle, but they show a little bit of belly. And that was like considered okay. But if you showed your knees, well, that's shocking. And you know, there's that book, The King and I, that actually was made into a movie, The King and I with Yul Brynner in the, 50s? And there's a formal banquet that he holds for the European ambassadors. And Anna Leanne Owens shows up and she's in like a Victorian ball gown, so it's off the shoulder. And he asks her, well, like, why? There's all this fabric, you know, down below, but how come you're showing your shoulders? That's shocking. Whereas his wives would show their bellies. So certainly there are some cultural norms, but there always has been this idea before the 1910s, there always was this idea that in public, a decent man and woman would wear that much fabric. So I offer that to you for your consideration, but thanks for your call.
Thank you, Betsy. Thanks very much. Abraham, I'm coming to you, but I got to take this break or else I'm going to be late for the break. So we'll go to Abraham in Mobile, Alabama when we get back. And if you've got a call, if you've got a question, if you've got a comment that you would like to share for Catherine Rose, the author of the new book, A Return to Beauty, Ancient Catholic Wisdom and Modern Fashion, you are welcome to call 888-318-7884.
Hang on. Catholic Answers Live will return in a moment.
In Morse code, the sequence SOS is a distress call. It's been said that it stands for Save Our Souls. Well, right now our world is in big trouble, and we're putting out an SOS call for help. Will you answer that call? St. Paul Street Evangelization, a Catholic nonprofit, has hundreds of teams who share the good news with souls who don't know Jesus. Catholic Answers is supported in part by St. Paul Street Evangelization. Visit streetevangelization.com to get involved.
Proclaiming the faith, changing lives.
The year was 2005. EWTN begins celebrating 25 years with its first family celebration in Denver, Colorado. Attendees will hear renowned speakers and can visit with the network's hosts and well-known Catholic authors.
To learn more about Mother Angelica's life and the history of EWTN, visit EWTN.com/Mother Angelica.
Welcome back. Catholic Answers Live. Catherine Rose, our guest. A Return to Beauty is her new book. And it's about fashion. It's about dressing. And it does all of that from a Catholic perspective. You can check it out. You can share it with your kids or get some ideas on how to talk with kids about these things. I have kept Abraham waiting a long time in Mobile, Alabama, listening on EWTN Radio. Abraham, thank you for your patience. Go ahead with your question for Catherine Rose.
Yes, my question, I guess. I'm a truck driver. And fortunately, masstimes.org gets me to church on most Sundays.
That's great.
So I get to visit a lot of different churches, and I've noticed a pattern, I guess, that whenever I attend a Latin Mass, everybody is dressed to the teeth. I mean, I didn't realize that they made a three-piece suit for a six-year-old.
That's what you see at the Latin Mass.
At the Latin Mass, everybody's dressed
right
the way that, you know, with honor, and whenever, you know, Mass is over, they quietly leave the sanctuary, and they step outside, and if they're going to chat or whatever they're going to do, they do it out there. And people that want to stay and pray a little bit, they're left to pray in quiet. And that's in the Latin Mass. In the regular Masses that I go to, where I take notice of how the Father is, his demeanor, and a lot of times I find, in my opinion only, is that the Mass is kind of done, and so, no big deal. There was no real reverence served. I don't see it. And I see that in the people around me and their dress and their attire as well.
Catherine, what do you think?
And I don't know.
Oh, I'm sorry. Abraham, I apologize. I didn't know. I thought you were done. Go ahead. Finish your point. I apologize.
And I don't know. I don't know if there's a correlation with the dress and the priests or the leaders being somewhat indifferent, or they don't want to say anything, so they don't. And people start pushing the envelope. Well, if I can get away with a button-up shirt untucked, well, then maybe next time I can get I'll wear a T-shirt.
Yep. Okay, Abraham. Thank you. Go ahead, Catherine.
So, Abraham, it sounds like you've noticed that based upon perhaps the intentionality of one's worship, one might dress differently. And that's, I think, a really astute observation. I know when I was in college and just coming to discover Jesus in the Blessed Sacrament, because I actually was not raised knowing that the Eucharist was Jesus present. I was raised with that it was a communal meal and it was the people gathered. So the more that I came to understand what's really happening at Mass, and I want to fall to my knees in adoration, I began to dress with more respect. And maybe that's what you're seeing at this Latin Mass parish you go to. So perhaps you wish that everybody would dress that way. And I think though it really comes down to what the pastor wants, and then also how to present that in a way that changes the whole culture. But ultimately, I do see a correlation, as you pointed out, between parishes that are perhaps a little bit more lightweight in their theology of the Mass, though very joyful and very loving, and those perhaps that focus a lot more on reverence. Thank you.
Thank you, Abraham. I appreciate that. I apologize that I didn't know when you were finished. I messed up. I didn't mean to be rude and step on what you were saying, but thank you. A Return to Beauty, Catherine Rose, that's her new book, and she is our guest. You are welcome to call 888-318-7884. I got to just get something out here. What about dudes? Like, is it really the woman's responsibility that that I am irresponsible in my gazing at women? Like how much of this are we laying on girls and women when maybe dudes need to take a little responsibility?
Yep. There can be so much resentment that women have about this very thing. That, like, I'm not dressing so that he'll look at me. In fact, at one point in college, before I knew better, I was dressed in, like, party club clothes, right? So something strappy on top, something tight on the bottom. And we were going to go out dancing with some friends and I. So I was, like, in an elevator with my friends, and there was some guy in the elevator, like, ogling us. I recall feeling indignant, like, ew. Like, that's so gross. He should look away. But I was not, like, anybody can look at me, right? Yeah. So I understand that women might feel indignant. And part of that's justified. So, like, when I was in India in college, we American students, we were all told to wear one pieces. But to the Indian eye, that's, like, shocking, right? Because women swim in their saris. So here I am in my one piece, and I was in the pool, and I, like, look up, and there's Indian men, like, lining the balcony.
Wow.
And it was like, it felt so icky, because they were looking at me as just a body when I was not intending that. I thought I was being modest. So certainly men can be overtly, I mean, they can be sinful, right? Jesus did say a man needs to take custody of his eyes. If he lusts after a woman in his heart, that's a sin. At the same time, women can have kindness for their brothers. I think, again, that as women, like, I never knew the power of the feminine body until I got married. And my husband helped me understand, like, wow, like, I mean, it's in Song of Songs, right? Well, I mean, as that, was his name David Gray, that singer in the 2010s, like, your body's a wonderland.
Oh, that wasn't David Gray. No, that was somebody else. I'm going to look that up. But yeah.
Look it up. Your body is a wonderland. Yeah. So women, like, our bodies are magical. John Mayer. And it's like really potent, good stuff that we want to honor our brothers. You know, St. Paul, I'm going to find this quote from St. Paul. And maybe actually, okay, here we go. 1 Corinthians 6. St. Paul says, "Do you not know that your body is a temple of the Holy Spirit within you, which you have formed from God? You are not your own. You were bought at a price. So glorify God with your body." And also later on, he talks about the eating of meat, right? And he says, like, well, there's nothing wrong in his, like, nothing sinful to eat meat that's offered to idols. But if it makes a brother sin, he will stop eating meat offered to idols. And, I mean, we know this. If I have a friend who's, like, a recovering alcoholic, I won't say, well, let's go to a bar for a drink. You know, like, you'll be fine. Just don't drink. Like, well, no. So many men, I mean, actually most men I know, have had some kind of experience with pornography. And also, it's on the rise among women. It's just everywhere. So good men who are struggling to overcome disordered lusts and perhaps addictions have to, like, live in a veritable minefield. You know, like, driving to work, there's a billboard for a tanning salon. And then at work, this young woman, she's really cute, might not be, like, wearing enough fabric. And then I go to church and there's, like, women in, like, backless strappy things. And so men have to always take custody of their eyes. And, you know, I mentioned earlier that at my parish, there's, like, a lot of reverence. And one man told me that the first time he came to my parish, he felt like, oh, I'm safe here. He said,
oh, wow.
these women love me and I can relax. I don't have to always, like, keep custody of my eyes. I can just rest. So there has to be an interplay of charity for the other. I think, of course, men, of course, strive to not lust after a woman in his heart and not look at her with lust. But as women, we can really honor our brothers and dress in such a way that we expect them to see us as honorable sisters in Christ, and not see us on the one hand as like sloppy bros, right? Like, oh, she's just one of the guys. We don't want them to see us that way, but also to see us as like pieces of meat.
Right. That's right.
So it's a chance to love each other.
It's a chance to for men to love women by being respectful with their, you know, not ogling and all of that
yes.
kind of thing. It's a chance for women to love men by being lovely and
lovely.
Womanly and all of that, but not being provocative. Even if you, and I do think sometimes, especially with young women, they don't actually know what is
nope.
like. Somebody has to tell them. Look, what that is to you is sweet and adorable. What that is to the boys or to the men around you is something. You're sending a completely different signal. And I, as a father of daughters, I have to say, you know, there's a certain age where you have to kind of help them with that, and it's unpleasant because you kind of feel like, you almost before they're ready for it, they have to know, look, these signals, they don't mean to men what they mean to you.
Yes. Yeah. And, you know, with Josephine, my daughter, she died 2 years ago from leukemia when she was 11. But before that, as a little girl, I never wanted to focus on like anything embarrassing. So I would never say like, oh, that's immodest or whatever. But rather, I always focused on instead on like, oh, isn't that pretty? Like, oh, yeah. That's so pretty. And if something had not enough fabric, I would say, oh, that feels embarrassing, doesn't it? Because like little girls naturally know like, oh, that's embarrassing
yeah.
until we teach them, oh, that's fine.
Yeah. Right.
So she was naturally aware of like, oh, this is me, and I want to like keep myself protected and comfortable, like really comfortable, because little shoppy things actually are not comfortable. They're not easy to walk in, easy to wear. I've worn them, and they're not actually made for moving. So
I want to go to Virginia in Dallas, Texas, listening on the Guadalupe Radio Network. Virginia, we just have a couple minutes left, so if you could be a little bit quick, it'll give Catherine a chance to respond. But go ahead.
Sure. Thank you for taking Michael. We have a priest that's been at our parish for a little over a year, and he immediately started stepping up the dress code. Guys need to wear a suit with a tie that goes with the liturgical year, and ladies have to wear a black skirt below the knee, nice shoes, comfortable shoes, and a white shirt. With a scarf that also goes with the liturgical year.
Wow, so it's a very specific dress code, Virginia.
Never heard that before.
Yeah.
All right.
It's beautiful. It's beautiful because you enter the church and you can tell who's volunteering, you know, welcoming committee, lector, minister, Eucharistic ministers, and everybody is up and down the aisle and people see them.
Oh, so for the volunteers.
I see. Yeah, I thought you were talking about everybody that comes to Mass has to wear a black skirt and comfortable shoes.
No, it's the volunteers.
Yeah.
We are responsible for our dress code. Sorry.
No, that's all right. Let's get Catherine to respond to that. I think both Catherine and I were like, wow, this priest is very bossy, but I get it. So the volunteers are dressing dressing up, in other words, for church.
But is this about okay, so then did you have a question or you just wanted to share that?
No, just wanted to share that the environment changes when there's people around well-dressed, and I'm so thankful for this priest that he also, on Sundays, we have a large group of catechism kids.
Wonderful. I'm so glad. Also, Cy, or I did not cut off.
No, you're still Virginia? At Virginia. Yeah, go ahead.
Okay. Well, also briefly, does he talk about what brides wear or bridesmaids?
Yeah, in the bulletin we have dress codes, and yes, and he's always inviting people that are living together that are not married, come and get married. We have weddings this state, community weddings, or you can have your own private wedding. He's very active. We are so blessed to have him. He's always reaching out. You want to go to heaven? Come on, do this. You want to go to heaven? Come on, do that.
and then also at your parish, do you have quinceañeras?
Yes, but it's only for people that are registered.
Yeah, otherwise you'd be inundated. Yes, right.
So then, does he have guidelines for like bridesmaids and bridal dresses and quinceañera dresses?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, no. We're running out of time.
Yeah, you're out of time. But you got about 15 seconds, Catherine.
Nope. Okay. Well, it's tough. It's tough so brides can add lace to their tops and add sleeves.
There you go.
There you go.
All right. Our guest, Catherine Rose, check out her book, A Return to Beauty. It's sane. It's a sane book. And I think that we need a little bit of return or invitation to sanity, ancient Catholic wisdom and modern fashion. Again, Catherine Rose is the author. Catherine, thank you so much. It was delightful to have you for an hour.
That was a great conversation. Thanks for having me.
That will do it for us. We'll see you next time, God willing, right here, Catholic Answers Live.